pumpkin spice coffee and Jared likes it.
It's true. I do like it.
I got pumpkin spice coffee creamer at the store, mostly because it was on sale and they had a ton of it.
It's almond coffee creamer too. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like really a thing that Jared likes.
I thought I'd hate it. I made a preconceived judgment and I was wrong. And I'm the first to admit it.
I appreciate that Jared likes it.
Well, I appreciate that you bought it. Hey, by the way, happy 75th episode.
Happy 75th episode, Jared.
It's technically the 80th, but... Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones. Across the table from me is MJ Kramer. Every week we talk about comics, or at least we try to. It's our 75th episode.
Pretty crazy.
I'm not sure how we got here, but we did it.
A lot of mornings getting up really early. Yeah. That's how we got here.
Yeah. And then, oh man, podcasting is serious business.
Yeah.
And then there's a site that we run also wrapped around it. Oh, good Lord. What have I done with my life? But anyway, before we get into all the brouhaha, in which we will be fielding questions from our beloved listeners. By the way, guys, thank you so much for those of you who contributed questions to this week's episode. We greatly appreciate it.
After us throwing so many questions at you guys and answering, it was really, really sweet and touching to get so many from you.
Yeah, we got some well wishes to boot. It warmed the cockles of this man's old heart and that Midgey's nice big heart. So before we get into that, of course, we're going to field some news. Got a couple of pieces of news. You want to do some news?
News.
And if my voice sounds weird, guys, I have a cold, and I may lose my voice by the end of this episode, so just be wary of that.
He sounds a little rough today. He's got a bad cold.
It's not good. All right, first order of business. Big news from Vault.
Very exciting news.
Yes. Chasing That Scholastic demo, following in the footsteps of Lion Forge and recently DC Comics, whenever we see that Zoom and Ink imprint, Vault Comics is going to be launching an all-ages imprint called Myriad.
It's aimed at middle grade and young adult readers. Vault has been putting out some really splendid offerings.
Yeah, I would say so. Late. Yeah.
And, I mean, they've been getting really good talent, talent that has really good ideas, and I think they'll do a good job on this.
I think they're really going to knock it out of the park. The question is, how they're going to present it. Are they going to just like have a broad range of graphic novels, or are they going to do like floppies, like Lion Forge does with their Roar imprint, or excuse me, with their Cub House imprint?
If they're going the way of DC, it's going to be more collections because everybody realizes the crazy success of cartoonists like Raina Telgemeier.
Yeah.
And those are all sold in regular volumes.
Right.
Like just little books, little digest-sized books. So I would guess that's what they're going to do. The field of like young adult and middle grade graphic novels has just been improving and getting better. First Second puts out a bunch of great stuff too.
Ah!
It's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's exciting to see comic publishers looking outside of the box.
Especially new ones like Vault.
Yeah.
They're still very young. I keep forgetting that considering the awesome slate of books that they've been putting out.
Yeah, they're real recent.
Yeah, but they're getting out ahead of this, and good for them. I think everyone that works there has a really solid head on their shoulders, and I think this is going to be a great success.
Fingers crossed.
All right. From that, we'll move on to a slightly alarming piece of news. Nothing too insane, but Ironheart issue number 1 and 2 will be pushed back just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, issue 1 is getting pushed back 2 weeks, and then issue 2 is getting pushed back 5 weeks. So that's kind of like 3 weeks in addition to the two that got the other one got pushed back.
Right, and of course, Ironheart is the awesome new debut spinning out of
the Iron Man series.
The Iron Man series, and then removing Riri Williams from the star role. She gets her own book. It's written by Chicago's own Eve Ewing. And art right now is by Kevin LeBranda. But with this news came the announcement that Luciano Vecchio is going to be pinch hitting for these guys. And I've been following this dude on Twitter for a while now. He really has a handle on like really vibrant, youthful, sprightly characters. He reminds me of Mike Paroback, splashed a little bit of anime. It's really good.
What stuff has he worked on before?
He's done a lot of fan art, mostly, that I can tell. He's doing more and more stuff for the big two because he just, people really love his stuff. Mm-hmm. I've shared his stuff dozens of times.
I've probably seen it then. Oh, yeah. I'll have to look back and see.
He did the variant cover for Ironheart 1, though. I'll just show that to you really quick. You'll get an idea of what he does. Here, check this out.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that looks good.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. So, I mean, good for him. Yeah. Marvel didn't really give a reason as to why the book's getting pushed back, but
well, I would guess them adding a second artist onto the second issue, because like Kevin LeBrand is still on there, they're just adding a second artist to it. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing maybe the art's just running a little late.
Could be.
But that's, you know, total postulation on my part.
Oh yes, I like how you got a little British there.
I was just enunciating.
Well, LeBrand is kind of new to comics too. I mean, he's primarily Marvel. He did Venomized. And I think I saw him on Steve Rogers' Captain America not too long ago. I'm trying to think of other things that
he's done. Well, if he's done a couple ongoing series, you'd think he'd be able to keep the schedule. But who knows? Maybe they had some kind of like last-minute editorial changes mm-hmm. that they needed someone else to draw in. Who knows?
Hey, it could be worse. It could be Justice League Odyssey.
Yeah, yeah, it could.
Hey, by the way, guys, if you're listening to this, are you reading Justice League Odyssey? Did you guys stick along with that? Because I haven't been reading it at all.
I read it.
Did you read it?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I like it. Okay, I wonder if... I feel like when it was first solicited, they were touting it as being like teen Darkseid, mm-hmm. and it seems to be grown up Darkseid.
That's
the book.
Fine.
So
with
I
me.
Wonder if that's what they had to go back and change.
Well, yeah, because teen Darkseid's a stupid idea.
I think teen Darkseid would have been great.
Look, Darkseid's been mishandled for years. Like nobody knows what to do with him. The only version of Darkseid I recognize is in Mr. Miracle, and that's going away. So
I've liked Justice League Odyssey so far, but the wait was kind of annoying, and it seems like the wind has gone out of its sails for a lot of people. The sales on it are definitely less than Justice League Dark.
Spare a thought for Stepien Sevic, who had to redraw, I think, the first two issues.
Yeah, it was the first two or three issues, something crazy.
Cooper, what? Cooper's back. He wants to know what's up.
But we have one other piece of news.
Yes.
Which is like, I don't know, good, but also kind of a bummer. They're pushing back the release date of the Wonder Woman 1984 movie.
It makes sense in a certain way because, like, Cooper, let's do the laser pointer thing. That'll. Oh, all right. I don't think Cooper liked me harshing on Josh Williams and stuff.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. He's a big fan.
Yeah. But, yeah, getting back to this, I mean, you look at the slate of movies that are coming around right around the time that Wonder Woman 1984 was originally going to come out in November. It's kind of a stacked deck. And speaking of which... Todd Phillips' Joker comes out at least, like, I think 2 weeks prior to that November release date. So pushing Wonder Woman back makes a lot of sense. And putting her in summer is optimal for, like, this kind of big-time DC movie.
Her first movie came out in June. I'm kind of sad it's going to be another 7 months to see it, but more time to perfect the movie to get it mm-hmm. to where they want it to go.
Get the special effects where they need to, so we don't get another disaster havoc trash porn sequence like we did in... the final 30 minutes of Wonder Woman 1?
Or just all of Justice League.
You know, people give Henry Cavill shit for that weird lip thing in Justice League, but I don't think enough people are giving David Thewlis shit for his weird, you know, porn stash as Ares in Wonder Woman.
I just thought it was weird that in the flashback sequence, when they're supposed to be back in ancient Greece, he still has that fucking mustache.
He really stuck with it.
Like, it should be like a full beard, you know?
If you're gonna have facial hair for eternity, is the mustache what you go for?
Well, I mean, it makes sense for the time that the movie took place in, like like World War II-ish. That's fine.
MJ, did you see anything else that happened this week that you wanted to talk about before we get to our questions?
No, actually, I noticed this week, I noticed that there was not much in the way of comic news. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what we were going to do, but I'm glad that you found these news items for us to chat about.
Yeah, you know. So MJ, this is our 75th episode, and as such, I decided that we should do something fun. And every podcast eventually does, and I'm not sure about every podcast, but most podcasts I listen to eventually do a Q&A episode, and I realized that we had never actually done that. And a lot of it was because I didn't think we actually had the listenership to give us questions, to tell you the truth.
But like the answers that we get for our questions every week, like it depends when we post them, but usually mm-hmm. we get a good amount.
Yeah, but how many of those folks do you think are actually listening? You think like some of those pros that answer... listening to us, that would freak me out.
I mean, some do.
Oh, God, I hope that's not true.
Well, It does freak me out a little bit too, because then I like,
we get critical on this podcast.
Yeah. And then I worry that like I'm going to say something that's going to be taken out of context and someone's going to get mad at me.
Yeah. That's the rub though, isn't it?
Yeah. But that I'm always worried about, oh, does that person like me? That's me.
Yeah, that's me too. Well, to an extent.
You're like less worried about it than
if me. I want to harsh on Bendis's Superman, I'm going to do it. I don't care what people have to say. He's got his money. He's fine.
And he's writing both Superman
books. I know. We'll incidentally be talking about that a little later on in the episode.
All right.
Yeah. But getting down to it, we're going to answer some questions.
Yes.
Yeah. So we posted all over social media. I guess Instagram is going to take a little longer to take root. But we got some from Twitter. We got some from Facebook. And we cherry-picked some of our favorites. And we'll just...
We even had some that came in just via, like, by messages from our friends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, my friend Mike Minnick sent us a few.
Oh, okay. So. I didn't get any in private message. Am I scary?
Yeah.
No.
You're very imposing.
Yeah. On the internet?
Yeah.
No. All right, so let's go over to Twitter real quick. I'm going to ask you the first question. We could both answer it if you'd like. Brandon at Brando Superhero asks, what's your all-time favorite Spidey story and why? And here's the 75 more. Congrats on the milestone. Thanks.
Thanks Brandon. Brandon.
That's really nice of you. Favorite Spider-Man story. What do you think?
I, you know, historically on this podcast, mm-hmm. I haven't read tons of Spider-Man, but I've read some.
Right.
And I don't know if it counts, but does the new video game count?
I'll say it counts, because that, oh my god, I'm playing it again all the way through on hard mode.
And you just got the DLC.
The Black Cat DLC, that's true. Yeah. Oh god, it's such a great game.
And it's so nice that they have modernized Black Cat's costume without all the fur and the, you know, the crazy low cleavage.
Yeah, she's a really hippie, though. That's
fine.
That doesn't bother you?
Some ladies got big butts, that's cool.
It's true. You got me there. well, my favorite Spider-Man like story in the comics, this goes back to the original Lee Ditko days, to specifically Amazing Spider-Man number 31 through 33, which told an epic story titled If This Be My Destiny. And it's that famous story where Spider-Man is lured into a trap and he's caught underneath like all this crushing weight and water, and if he doesn't lift it up, Aunt May's gonna die, he's gonna die, the whole world's gonna... It's going to be insane. So he has to muster up the will to heave this gigantic weight, both physically and metaphorically, in order to win the day.
Like in the end of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Well, look, this has happened a lot in Spider-Man's career, but this is the first time it happened. This was like one of the biggest dramatic moments that ever took place in Peter Parker's life up to that point. And I remember reading it for the first time and really feeling it, because Ditko blew it up. Like, he had splash pages in this sucker. You know, usually he had like 9-panel to 7-panel grid, and this one was just like big widescreen action, but also very small, zeroed in and intimate. And you know, Lee, for all his usual bombast, really stuck the landing on the dramatics. I was very impressed by it as a kid, and it sticks with me now. So yeah, that would be my favorite Spider-Man story.
I have, like, the Spider-Man stories that I enjoy aren't necessarily from ASM or from like a specific like Spider-Man series.
Right.
But Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane. That is a book that I quite like.
I know you like
Mr. it. Mr. Sean McKeever wrote that one. And there's a, back when they were doing just after Brand New Day and it was ASM was still like 3 times a month and they were switching up the writers and artists all the time. They did this, The Gauntlet. And one of
that.
The stories in there, the Lizard one by Zeb Wells and Chris Bacalo, was so good. It's one of like the few Spider-Man hardcovers I own. It was real cool.
I remember when we first met and I was checking out like your bookshelves and I was like, where the hell's all the Spider-Man? I didn't realize till it was far too late. Till it was far too late.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
But I feel like you're coming around on Spidey these days.
But I also like a lot of, like I read a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't necessarily have that in hardcover.
I sold all my trays as I read them.
Yeah, I don't remember if I think that was stuff that I read when I used to work at Borders way back in the day. I would just check out books from the store because we were allowed to do that and just read them there. So I don't think I ever bought those. I just read them. But also, Ultimate Spider-Man, while David LaFuente was doing the art, that's my jam.
That was the Miles Morales time.
No, it was just a bit before Miles.
Oh, so just leading up to when Peter Parker, spoilers, died.
Yes. Yeah. So, but it was a bit before then when it wasn't about Peter dying. It was just fun high school shit. And David LaFuente drew Gwen Stacy as super adorable and goth. It was awesome. And he drew MJ great too. And David LaFuente's art is awesome.
Ultimate Spider-Man is such a great story.
Yeah.
I would kill to read that again, actually. Wait, what am I saying? I could just go buy it. I don't have to murder anybody to read it.
True.
I'm also sick and not making any sense today. We picked a hell of a week to do a Q&A episode.
Or you picked a hell of a week to get sick.
Yeah, I picked it. I picked it. You know, it started with that damn wedding we went to a couple weeks back. That's when I started feeling a little blue.
Maybe you just need to read more comics to feel better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dr. MJ. Mm-hmm. Read more comics. That's good. Let's go over to Facebook. Jamie Jones of Doom Rocket. She asked us a nice little question. What event / story arc disappointed you the most? Like, you were super psyched for it, but it turned out to be hot garbage. It could be comics, movies, or TV. What do you got?
The new 52.
The new 52? You were excited for that?
I was.
I was so mad about it.
There's a. It's easy to get me excited about something, especially like something that I'm already excited about peripherally. So like, I already like the DC Universe. Okay, they're going to do new stuff, and a lot of my favorite creators are going to be involved.
Yeah, everyone had a job at that point.
Yeah, it's just like, there's a positivity that used to be there, but because I was excited about it and it disappointed me so deeply, I am much less likely to trust, just in general.
Yeah, people, but public servants, police officers, it's all DC's fault.
But comics stuff mostly, comics like initiatives.
Right.
I'm less likely to have faith in the big two as publishers, just because the new 52 really made it known to me that they consider these characters IP and not much more.
Yeah, that's when you kind of grew up as, not in a negative way, but like, realize that this is a business first, and the magic and mystery of it is kind of just, and I had to
divorce myself from following characters.
Yeah,
which, like, I guess there's maybe a couple characters that I still follow, but none of them I will follow faithfully enough to read if
you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, if the writer sucks, or if the art sucks, or both. So like, the new 52 had a big effect on me.
Yeah.
It was a big bummer. It was a big bummer.
I would agree. I would have that be my answer, but I was not psyched for it at all. I remember reading Flashpoint and going, where are we going? I don't like this. Why are we going this way? What are we doing? So, yeah, not that. I put down recently the Defenders Netflix series was a big letdown that I was really pumped about. And it was just like, as Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist were materializing, I was like, wait a second. This is just what it's going to look like. It's just going to be the four Defenders fighting people in hallways.
I wasn't disappointed by it, but I didn't have that high.
Well, they subverted my expectations by fighting in a cave instead. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, whatever. But I also wrote down the premiere and the finale to any of the CWDC TV shows. I always get myself hyped up, and then I end up watching them and I go, oh God, I forget. These are just not good. And they have so much potential. That's what breaks my heart. But all time, events where I was like really stoked about them, and then I read them and I went, Batman Endgame. I was surprised they were bringing the Joker back so quickly after death of the family. But I had total faith in what Snyder and Capullo could do. And then I read it, and I don't know. Like, I know now that it was all set up for Metal. But that doesn't make it any better, because I thought Metal stunk too. So.
See, I was thinking about putting Metal on this list, but I wasn't really excited for it in the first place. Mm-hmm. One of our very first conversations, like possibly our first conversation, was about how much you liked Death of the Family. And yeah. I was like,
Yeah, you got a red flag for me on that one.
This is when I worked back at Challengers.
Yeah. I really liked that one too. It didn't really stick the landing in terms of how it involved the actual Bat Family, because it was really just a story about Batman and the Joker.
But his faces get ripped off.
That was all superficial for me. It was all thematic stuff. That was the good stuff. But for Superman, recently, the Oz effect really bummed me out, because I was like, finally I'm going to figure out who this Mr. Oz loser actually is, and then it turned out to be Jor-El, or is it? We still don't have a definitive answer on that. That's another thing that pisses me off about it. It's like, the most recent issue of Action, spoilers for the most recent issue of Action, but not really, insinuates that Jor-El is who he says he is.
Yeah.
But we still don't know for sure, and Superman just let his wife and his son fly off with somebody he doesn't trust, but whatever, it's fine. And then another one is Man of Steel. Bendis's Man of Steel. I was really nervous about it, but I was excited because, hey, big Superman event. I'm always excited about those. And the execution was so plotting, and it went nowhere, and it was just all set up for his, like, who knows, 20-year-long arc.
It's funny that you mentioned the Man of Steel miniseries, because I have the Man of Steel movie on here.
Mm.
I let myself get excited for that movie very stupidly.
Me too.
Because that for initial trailer was super good.
It was amazing.
Yeah, because Snyder makes good trailers and shit.
And Hans Zimmer's Superman score was spectacular. Still is.
Yeah. That was another thing when I let myself get excited and learned my lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And never let myself get excited about a DC movie after that, except for Wonder Woman.
I think the moral of the story is, kids, just don't allow yourself to be fooled by anything. Don't get excited anymore. Realize that life is just one gray slog of disappointment, one after the other. And you'll be fine. You'll be just fine.
But Marvel movies will probably never disappoint you. So you can keep your faith in that.
Depending. Thor the Dark World, anybody?
I didn't hate Thor the Dark World, and I will go on record for that.
Mr. Gene Ha, who was our first ever guest on Casual Wednesdays in our pilot episode, which you can find on iTunes.
Yeah, before it was really a...
It was really rough, that episode.
Yeah, we hadn't really found our format yet.
Mm-mm. But he asks us, if you could write one story arc on any comic book, which title would it be and what would your tale be about? MJ, I'm very interested to see what you wrote down for this.
It's hard for me to just think of shit like this off the top of my head, but... Since Gene asks the question, it just made me think I wouldn't mind co-writing more May with him. Because, like, I wrote one issue by myself that already came out, but the next issue that comes out, I kind of just co-wrote a couple scenes with Gene on it. And, like, I would like doing more of that.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
It was good in that, like, it felt very defined. Yeah. I knew what I needed to do for that issue.
And now you're familiar with the world and its story and its characters, and it'd be easy to slip back in.
I kind of like what the editors are looking for in it. So, like, that would be fun.
Well, that's really interesting. I answered Superman or Action Comics, obviously, because then I would finally get to tell that Superman lost in space for a whole damn year story arc that I have bombing around in my head. I have, like, issues mapped out in my head that I'm never going to write about Superman just being lost in space and trying to find his way home.
There's always fan fiction.
On Facebook still, Tom Galloway asked a very nice question. What does Doom Rocket mean to y'all? I.e., why are you doing it? What are you personally getting out of doing it?
Well, this is more of a Jared question than an MJ question.
You are very much a part of Doom Rocket, sir.
Yeah.
You're the co-host of its flagship podcast.
I am.
Yeah.
But, like, it's your baby. What does Doom Rocket mean to you?
It's interesting because when Doom Rocket began, it was a film review site. I was really trying to become a film critic. And I was writing a lot of reviews and going to, you know, Chicago International Film Festival every year and just, like, getting off of work and going downtown and watching as many movies as I could and writing about them. And I was, as much as I was having fun, I wasn't really enjoying what I was writing. And then I was gravitating towards writing more about, like, comics and such, and then I met you. And
I think the turn to comics was a little bit of me.
Yeah.
A lot.
I did a hard pivot into comics when we started dating, because all of a sudden I was reading a lot more than I used to. I mean, I was still reading a fair amount, but, like, I was diving back in at this point.
And I forced him back in. Right.
And I think that's what Doom Rocket really does mean to me. It's, like, it's my declaration of my love for this medium and how you can be critical of something you love and still love it. You don't have to be critical and cruel about it. I think that's one of the best things about Doom Rock is that it's allowed me to learn a few things about myself going forward, about maybe being a little too pedantic about certain stories, maybe being a little too harsh when it comes to somebody's output. I learned a couple of lessons with a few interactions with a few creators going forward in the beginning that I took to heart, and I am really grateful for now. And now I have really wonderful relationships with people in the industry and out that just love comic books. And I've met so many folks because of it. And that's what I get out of it. I get to meet wonderful people and I get to work with wonderful people and
promote the books you love.
And promote the books I love. And if everything works out, I'll continue to do this for years to come. But who knows? So yeah, thanks, Tom. That was a good question.
Also, your answer calmed down Cooper. He is just hanging out in the corner. cool as a cucumber now. It's
about time, that little spud. All right, Chris Jordan asks, which two Batman actors would you Thunderdome, and who do you think would win? This is a silly one. I don't know. I think just Bale and Affleck, because they were the meatiest ones who actually did their own fighting. Maybe see how that goes.
Bale in Begins, because that's when he was like...
Yeah, real brawny.
Yeah.
Yeah, thick's a good word to describe. And Bale would win, of course, because Christian Bale could, and I say this all the time, break into Warner Brothers archives, steal a Batsuit, and go fight crime. As is.
Yeah.
In his Dick Cheney bod, even. He's insane. He's absolutely insane. Oh,
don't
insane.
Remind me about that.
Oh. He's really scary good in that trailer.
I have not watched it because I don't want to be... One movie that I did with Amy Adams unsettled me enough when he got fat and bald. I don't
American Hustle.
Yeah, I don't want to see him.
He's much fatter in this.
I don't want to think about it. He was my one true love for a while before he screamed at that sound guy.
Yeah, but now he's like Dick Cheney. And it's spooky. It's spooky.
I don't want to think about this anymore. Next question.
Right, next question. Lisa Olson has a funny one for us. Will this episode have a Chromium variant cover? Oh, Lisa.
I mean, maybe just a foil cover, since this is DC's foil cover month.
Actually, I did change the podcast graphic logo. I don't know why iTunes hasn't snatched it up yet, but every other podcatcher has it. It's more silver and blue, kind of like the foil covers that DC has right now. Mm-hmm. So, to answer your question, yes. But then again, so do all the episodes, Lisa. Thanks for asking. Mike Minnick on Facebook asked us, what comic would you like to see get an absolute edition? I presume he just means DC.
Oh, I didn't just go with DC.
I didn't figure.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Well, Wonder Woman Year One, that recent story with Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I don't know if it's enough of a story to merit an absolute. It'd be a very tiny one.
Why not? Joker and Luthor got
An absolute edition of The Killing Joke, which is a prestige one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
They just loaded it up with extras. But yeah, Wonder Woman Year One, Joelle Jones and Laura Allred's Catwoman, and Jason Aaron's Thor.
Jason Aaron's Thor thing would be awesome if Marvel got it together enough to put an omnibus out. As an absolute edition.
I'm sure they will eventually.
They would have to do multiple volumes
for
the Thor
thing. Which they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Joelle Jones Catwoman one just started.
Yeah. So I want to see that shit in an absolute.
It would look good. You're not wrong. I want Zero Hour. The big time warping DC event that featured the ultimate death of Hal Jordan. I savored that. I savored that moment.
I don't think anybody at that publisher wants to remember that.
But I think also because, I mean, you had Dan Jurgens drawing and Jerry Ordway's inks. I mean, the art looked incredible. And to blow that up to absolute edition size, I think it would be a very handsome hardcover. And you could make it all white, like the void, like the time void that eats everything. It would look amazing. That's the one I want.
It'd be so easy to get dirty.
Mm-hmm. Minnick actually had a couple of questions for us, and this is one that I really liked, and I took time to answer. What creative team would you like to see work together that hasn't before, like, say, Brian K. Vaughan or Frank Quitely? Also, what book should they work on that neither of them have worked on before? This was a tough question.
I have a lot of answers for this one.
All right, let's have it.
All right, so I've got Kelly Sue DeConnick and Joelle Jones on, like, anything. Jewel Wilson and Adam Hughes on Wonder Woman, because she hasn't worked on Wonder Woman yet. It's still coming out.
Adam Hughes has done covers for Wonder Woman.
But they haven't worked together. Shut up.
Oh, no.
Kelly Thompson and Raphael Albuquerque on a Harley and Ivy book.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm doing lots of DC here. Oh,
that's
well.
That's fine.
Jeremy Whitley and Bilquis Evely on Supergirl.
That would be something.
Teeny Howard and Nick Robles on a Batgirl Nightwing book.
That would be great.
And I know they've worked together before. I don't care. It's too perfect of a fit.
You're breaking all the rules here.
I don't care. I don't care.
Oh, man. What a rebel.
And there was, this is something that got announced, and that Nick Spencer, Becky Cloonan, Young Doctor Doom series was announced like 7 years ago and like promptly canceled.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to see that.
Yeah.
Or Becky Cloonan on Wonder Woman, drawing and writing Catwoman, or drawing and writing a Gotham City Sirens, but Becky Cloonan on anything.
Just put her on Batman.
No.
Oh, well, I got one.
What?
I just have one. because it took me a really long time to think about it, but I want Teeny Howard with Alex Ross on a revamp of Modesty Blaze.
Interesting.
Yeah, that book would rule. All the fashion, all the, you know, lethality. Teeny's got like that wit and that edge to her. And
I don't know how well Alex Ross is going to do fashion, though.
Alex Ross can do magnificent fashion. If you ever look at his books, like, what's that book he did for DC? Because his new one for Marvel, Marvelocity's out, but he did Absolute Power or something like that.
The Rough Justice book?
The Rough Justice, that's okay. The one. He shows old stuff that his mom used to do, and then he shows, like, comparative stuff that he did, like, you know, fashion-wise, like, just, like, trying to, like...
Oh, I mean, I know he can draw fashion, but I don't know how much of an eye for what to draw he has.
That's where Teeny comes in. Okay. This is a collaboration. And I think these two together on a Modesty Blaze book would be amazing. Like, just line up the Eisners, people.
I'd say Chris Anka for that shit. Oh, I didn't say anything with Chris Anka, but he doesn't like DC.
Oh, well.
Chris Anka on a Thor book, man. Chris Anka on a Namor book. Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anka on a Namor book.
Yeah, that'd be something. Yeah. That's practically about to happen. You know, it's like just a year away.
I wish.
All right. One more from Mr. Minute, because he actually asked a lot of great questions. Pick your perfect 7-member JLA roster. Now that they formed, what the hell are they going to do? Did you get one for this?
Yeah.
Oh, God, lay it on me.
All right. And I didn't just do DC. I did a co-publisher crossover.
I can't wait. This is great.
Got Wonder Woman, Batgirl, Starfire, John Stewart, Green Lantern, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, Thor, and Okoye. And they fight Cersei, Loki, Kraven, and Ra's al Ghul, teamed up for whatever reason, who have happened to have kidnapped Dick Grayson.
Wow.
And this is the story I was talking about that I would like to write, I think.
What? Why would they kidnap Dick Grayson? Why is he so special?
I don't know. Ra's al Ghul is weird. But that's why Batgirl and Starfire are both on the team. So, and they both get to work together.
Yeah, that's all good stuff. Yeah. But
and also Wonder Woman and Thor working together, how fucking cool would that be? And I haven't decided if it's going to be Odinson Thor or Jane Thor. Mm-hmm. But I just want to have them talking about like their various pantheons and like, yeah, right. It was God's man.
God dang it.
Yeah.
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 I think
it'd be really fun.
That's a really cool team.
Yeah. What's yours?
You had me at Spider-Man. I actually came prepared for this one because this is back when Doom Rocket's like post-comic explosion was still cooling into what it became today. And I was doing a lot of speculative articles back then. When it was practically like me and like four other people doing comics. So I wrote a new direction for Justice League to take because at the time Brian Hitch was doing it. And I felt like it was just kind of stayed and a little bland.
It was languishing.
So I was like, here's the team that you do. Here's what they would do. And here's how you make it exciting. And this is before the Terrifics, by the way. When I put this together, so keep that in mind. My team lineup goes as such. The Flash, Wally West. Val Zod, the Superman of Earth 2. Mera, Mr. Terrific. The Martian Manhunter. Natasha Irons' version of Steel. And Zatanna. And the first threat that I pit them against would be Solaris, the Tyrant Son. But the Tyrant Son that they would fight would be from the Earth 2 dimension, which is the reason why Val Zod comes to Prime Earth, naturally. And the team would ultimately form an official base in an abandoned monolith located in the Monitor Sphere on the outskirts of the known multiverse. And at some point, I'd have Mr. Terrific attain some sort of cosmic consciousness that allows him to, among other things, manipulate the Bleed so that they can travel throughout the multiverse as crises arise. And various versions of the superheroes and entirely new ones from various realities would come and go as the stories carried on. I like the idea of a reality that has a Blue Lantern core that's as vital to the cosmos as the Green Lanterns are to the Prime reality, and would probably try to put that into the story as soon as I was able, with one Blue Lantern definitely staying on the team indefinitely, and give me an opportunity to create a Blue Lantern while I was at it. So that would be my Justice League story, which, holy crap, I really want to write. It seems like it'd be a lot of fun. All right, we're running short on time. We got time for one more question. MJ, do you want to pick it?
All right. So Elijah Edmonds asked us, if you could pinpoint one book or run that made you go, ah yes, comics are definitely my shit, what would it be?
I know I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but it was a Superman book. And specifically, it was Superman 82, the issue he came back, like all the way back, defeated the cyborg Superman, saved the day. We didn't have Superman for 2 years. I was getting depressed. It was like, I'm enjoying these characters, but I was like, I need Superman. I didn't realize how much I needed the guy until he was gone. And he was gone in all the books. It's not like DC where it's like, choose your own adventure. Like, he was gone. So Superman 82, him returning triumphantly. I was like, my God, this is exciting. I love comics for the rest of my life. What about you?
Well, it's a mixture of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. But also the era of DC that was leading up into Infinite Crisis.
That was a good time.
Because that was a well-orchestrated, shared universe right there. And I miss DC feeling like that.
Yeah, me
DC
too.
DC just feels like editorial edicts at this point, which, yes, big event thing in a shared universe is always going to be lots of editorial edicts, but it didn't feel that way.
All right, MJ, we got to do our top five. You ready for it?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. All right, MJ, I'm going to start us off this week, if that's okay with you.
Totally fine.
All right, I'm starting to lose my voice here. Vampironica number 4 from Archie Comics and Archie Horror starts me off this week. This one's written by Greg and Meg Smallwood, art by Greg Scott, colors by Matt Herms, letters by Jack Morelli. Even though this book takes forever and a day to come out, it's always worth it. I really enjoy the concept. I think it's an idea so damn good it should have been mine. But it ain't. It's here. I'll read it anyway. Vampironica number 4 is my first pick. MJ, what's first for you?
My first pick is one of those new Vertigo books, Books of Magic number 1, written by Kat Howard, illustrated by Tom Fowler, colors by Jordan Boyd, letters by Todd Klein.
Todd Klein really Harry Pottered up his line work in this issue. Did you look at any of the lettering in this?
I haven't read it yet.
Oh, I flipped through it earlier this week.
I'm just crossing my fingers to see somebody dumb on Twitter saying, what's this Harry Potter ripoff?
They're kind of leaning into it a little bit.
Which is totally fine. But it's funny because Vertigo, you know, 10 years or so, put out their sort of a funny take on Harry Potter, which was the Unwritten series.
Yeah, I remember.
Had this character, Tommy Taylor. It's funny. This was out before Harry Potter, which I'm sure you all know. So.
Speaking of Tommy Taylor, silly. That guy needs to write Nightwing.
Yeah.
For any DC That'd editors cool. that may be listening right now.
Which I think the first time I met Tom Taylor, I mentioned like, wait, like Tommy Taylor? But now Unwritten isn't as big of a book, so it's not a... I don't think he gets asked that as much anymore.
Well, my next pick is, believe it or not, Action Comics number 1004.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a Superman book in my top five for the first time in months.
That's in my top five, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's not surprising. You pick it every week.
Because it's good.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's good. This one has art by Mr. Ryan Sook.
Yeah, it's written by Bendis, inks by Wade Von Grawbadger, colors by Brad Anderson, letters by Josh Reed. I picked it largely because of the Steve Rude foil cover, where Superman's hovering over some flying geese. And
Francis Manapul cover ain't no slouch either. It's got Clark and Lois smooching.
Yeah, but now, like, I don't know. I picked this one because of the art. I picked it because of the cover. The content's got me a little bummed out. I'm not going to spoil it here. But it establishes a new set of rules for Clark and Lois's relationship that I don't think I like.
Okay.
It keeps them a little pushed apart, like where Superman could be over here on his own and Lois could be over here on her own. And John could just be up in space with what could probably be a fraud. Who knows?
But it makes sense for Lois.
It does. It does make sense for Lois if she was still working at the planet. I don't know what the hell she's doing. She's writing a book? Since when? When the hell did that happen? Anyway.
Jared has so many feelings. Don't change my Superman.
No, I'm fine with change. I accept change. I want change to make some sense, and I want stories not to have, like, plotting plot threads. Like, the goddamn arson thing still hasn't been resolved.
Okay.
Like, I can go on. I could go on. But it's in my pick this week, in spite of it all. Action Comics number 1004, our next pick.
We'll do your next one, then, since I had Action as mine as well.
Thanks, MJ. Well, my next pick is the latest from Black Crown, Lodger number 1.
That's on my top five, too.
Oh, man, this is going great. This is written by David and Maria Lapham, they of Straight Bullets fame. Art, of course, by Mr. Lapham himself, edited by the inimitable Shelley Bond. Lodger number 1, I've already reviewed. It's up on Doom Rocket. I gave it a very rare from me, 9.5 out of 10. This book was a knockout, and it scared the shit out of me. I didn't count on how scary it was. I knew it was going to be, like, you know, like a crime story. Like, it's a revenge tale of this 18-year-old girl following the trail of blood left behind in the wake of a serial killer who murdered her parents. But I recommend it highly. Lodger number 1 is our next pick, and I'll move it over to you, MJ.
All right. So my penultimate pick for the week is such a weird name. Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider.
Mm-hmm.
But Ghost Spider is her new name.
Yeah, but which order does it go? Because I've seen both.
I think it's Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider. Written by Seanan McGuire, artist Rosie Campa, color artist Ian Herring, letters by Clayton Cowles. This is the next chapter in Earth 65's Gwen Stacy's life. Pretty excited.
Where's she hanging her hood these days?
We'll find out.
I guess so.
I'm sure she's still in Earth 65.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair.
So, but Seanan McGuire is a great novelist. She's done a X-Men annual so far, and I think another X-Men book. But it's always cool to see Marvel looking outside the box to find new people. Shauna McGuire has been lobbying to write the X-Men for a super long time, and I'm glad she landed on Gwen, because I think I think it's a good fit for her.
I think editors don't like it when writers want something too much.
Maybe, but I mean, she wet her teeth on the X-Men stuff. So, and then they got her in a space where she'll fit well.
All right, fair enough.
What's your next pick, sir?
Next pick is High Heaven number 2 from Ahoy Comics. This follows up a grand debut, High Heaven number 1 from last month. This is written by Tom Pyre, art by Greg Scott, colors by Andy Troy, letters by Rob Steen. High Heaven number 2 is the premise where this real jackass dies, ends up in heaven. Heaven doesn't turn out to be this, like, shining beacon of, like, you know, love and beauty for all of eternity, but rather kind of a more mundane, but perfected version of capitalism, and he starts kvetching about it, and how dare he whine in the gates of heaven, and people start getting really pissed at him, and it's hilarious. It is one of the funniest books I've read this year, and I highly recommend it. I have it number 2, my second to last pick. MJ, what's last?
My last pick is Thor What If. This is a light week, guys. Sorry.
It's fine.
There's like barely anything coming out from Image, so. But this is written by Ethan Sachs, who's been doing that Old Man Hawkeye book. Mm-hmm. Artist Michelle Bandini. Colors by Matt Miller. Letters by VC's Joe Sabino. And the premise of this is, what if Thor was raised by frost giants? It's kind of
pretty simple.
Yeah, where Loki was adopted by Odin. It's reversed, where Loki was adopted, or where Thor was adopted by Laufey.
And he's all snowmanned up.
Yep, he's all blue.
Blue. My last pick this week is Dead Kings number 1 from Aftershock Comics. This one's written by Steve Orlando, art by Matthew Dow Smith, colors by Lauren Affey, and letters by Thomas Maurer. I know nothing about this book. I have read none of the press materials. I'm just excited to see Steve working with Aftershock. I think it's going to be a good fit. Really excited to check this out, and I think you guys should too. Dead Kings number 1 closes out our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week. Now, MJ, since we were answering questions all episode long, we actually took zero time to ask a question for our listeners this week. So for our back matter, I just wanted to ask you a single one.
All right.
Going forward in the episodes to come, what would you like to see us do? Do you want to see us change formats a little bit? Do you want to see a specific, like, topic get brought up?
I like it how it is.
I know you like it how it is, but isn't there anything specific that you want us to cover? I mean, every week we talk about what we're going to do, and we always end up falling on what's happening that week. Is there, like, a theme episode you've been holding out on me that you want to share with us now?
Well, I've been telling you for a long time I want to do a Sandman episode.
Mm-hmm. I got to read the rest of it first.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everyone knows that I haven't finished Sandman. That's not a secret. Making that face at me.
I know.
Sandman episode, huh? I wouldn't mind doing a Preacher episode.
Well, then I'd have to finish that.
See? Maybe one day we'll both read our respective books in tandem, and then we'll do each episode back to back.
But Sandman's better.
You haven't finished Preacher, though. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. It's probably true, but I think
Sandman has a lot less dick jokes.
Yeah. But dick jokes don't necessarily break a book.
And then fart jokes.
There aren't that many fart jokes. There are far more dick jokes than there are fart jokes.
There's a lot of ass jokes in general. With a character named Arseface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also got a lot of heart. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. God damn it.
What sort of episode do you want to see us do more of?
Actually, I think a Sandman Preacher back-to-back extravaganza would be pretty awesome, actually. Should probably get around to that. But I really want to do, like, more publisher-focused episodes. Like, we did one on Black Mask last year that went over really well. It was a lot of research and it was a lot of work, but I thought that it was kind of a rewarding experience because you get to find out more about, you know, a publisher that you probably wouldn't dig too deep into in the first place.
We definitely should steer away from DC a tiny bit.
Yeah, I think...
Our autopilot is kind of set on that, so we have to kind of work to be like, oh, wait, no, we just did all that DC stuff.
Well, they're making a lot of bad decisions right now, so it's easy for me to ignore a lot of the stuff DC's putting out right now. Although I am really intrigued about Hawkman. I think what we should do is probably do like a underdog comic episode where it was a sleeper hit, didn't do a whole lot of sales initially, but then started to slowly build a big fan base, books like that. And I think the recent run of Hawkman is doing that now. I think that'd be really interesting to check out.
Interesting.
You want to do guests?
I guess we could. We used to get another mic.
Yeah. And then we'd have to have people over.
Yeah. Well, we almost invited my friend Megan Ansbach, who's a huge X-Men person, to be on for our X-Men episode. But then it was like, oh, wait a second. We only have two mics.
Yeah.
Would have to be some kind of like backup singer thing where two people would be sharing a mic.
If we do get a third mic, I think Megan would be the first person I'd want to have to like do a redo. Because I still hear shit about how our X-Men episode was kind of a little sparse.
She told me that she liked our episode.
I'm not talking about her.
Oh. But her and Raphael would be good to have on for an X-Men episode because they are both big X-Men peeps.
I'd love to have Arpad, if he ever comes into Chicago, have him on. Have him school us on some manga, perhaps. Also, Don Alsafi, who has a magnificent voice. He's just like made for radio. Having him on here to do like a Marvel episode.
Yeah, just Marvel in general.
Just Marvel in general, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And also, we never did do that Fantastic Four spin-off series. So I think like a Fantastic Four focused episode would be appropriate at some point.
I thought we did a Fantastic Four episode.
More Fantastic Four centered episodes. We've only done two technically. We did one when they were gone and didn't look like they were coming back. And then we did one when they announced it during a solicits episode. So it was kind of buried underneath a lot of other stuff. But, you know, just saying. And that's it. That's all the time we have for this week's Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 75-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays on doomrocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon. And while you're at it, look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
@MollyJane_K.
Thank you, MJ. So until the day people are silly enough to listen to yet another 75 hours of this drivel, I remain Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at doomrocket.com, have a great new comic book day.
When you put it that way, 75 hours, that's...
That's a lot.
That's a lot of us just... talking about sillies.
I know. This is our life, MJ. Oh, this is how we live our life.